Okay, so Hamid is here, you just can't see him. I'm going to be beginning this afternoon with a little bit of movement. Being in our bodies is part of being in this world. Embodiment is an important part of actualizing our realization. Being in relationship to another includes every part of us, not just our heart, not just our mind, not just our body, but our being, which comes through each of these areas in our life in very unique ways and is part of what we are as a human being. So we're going to begin this afternoon moving around a little bit. We're going to do that in a really particular way. And you should only engage in the movement to the degree that you're comfortable. You might just want to stand and we're going to do some, a little bit of music, rhythm. And the music is very sinuous and sensual. You can just stand and let it go through you, or you can move to it. You can recede into the back of the room and let yourself wind around into it, or you can be very quiet. You're welcome to sit. Just feel your level of comfort. But the point is to pay attention to your body, to pay attention to the feeling of your body. If you're feeling presence or that light in your body, let yourself move from it, with it, as it, and see how much you can allow that to infuse your movement. So we're really learning here with Divine Arrows how to come from that light and bring it through the body, heart, and mind into the world in relation to another. So we're going to begin this afternoon with, first of all, standing up. And from here, you can determine whether you want to go back to sitting, where you want to be in the room. Feel free to move around. And I'd like you just for a moment to feel your feet on the ground. Let gravity take you. Don't resist it. Let it take you and hold you. Gravity actually isn't just a force down, it's a force through everything. It's actually a curvature of space. It's not a linear drop, but that's the effect on the physical body. So take a few breaths. I want you to feel that flame in your belly again. Take a few breaths into it. This time that flame is happening inside a faceted crystal. So the luminosity is radiating through every facet. And we're going to turn on the music. Let yourself continue to feel your feet, but letting yourself feel the support of your feet all through your body. And just letting yourself move. Feeling sensual or not, energetic or not, just to the degree that you feel you are, and then let yourself go a little beyond it. Cage held by your pelvis, moving in a dance with it. And let your head join in. Let it lose control a little bit. Let your occiput, let out your Vajrayogini. Chakrasambhara. Just feel your body, feel your belly, just feel the energy, presence, light, whatever's there. You may feel resistances, tensions, include them. Don't exclude them. Include everything. Whatever emotion might have stirred, whatever thoughts are coming in. Hold them along with the energy, the presence, emptiness, space, whatever is there. And now I want you to bring your attention to your hands and put them in front of you. And let the energy between them create a ball of light. And you can kind of squish it together and kind of feel that there's a slight almost resistance or a push against. Get close enough so you actually feel that. And let it grow. Let it build. Keep your hands close enough that you actually feel the fullness growing. When you feel like you've got a little bit of a ball of light there, I want you to put it in your belly. If you can't feel one, that's fine. Put the one that you can't feel in your belly. Okay, so keep sensing into your belly and have a seat.
So in exploring divine eros, we are not really working with the central, most fundamental element of enlightenment or realization. We're not working simply with the stillness and the abiding and emptiness, the luminosity of being and awareness. We are taking a particular manifestation, expression of that in everyday life. Because one of the ways that our true nature expresses itself is, beside awareness, is life. As the aliveness that by which we say we know we are alive. We know life because we are expression of life. And life can express itself in many ways, as we know, across the board, from the most gross, the most subtle. Divine Eros is a kind of subtle expression of life as it refines itself through practice and inner illumination, so that desire and heart become unified, where the wanting of intimacy is just as fulfilling as the intimacy itself. So divine eros is basically is life, but not only life, but life loving life. Life loving life means life turned on to life. Life in the condition of being turned on. Turned on to being alive, to whatever way life is expressing itself. And just pure experience and activity and relating and practicing, there's a turned on quality that has love in it, appreciation in it, experimental playfulness to it, which is the way life is. If you look at evolution, it's always been like that, experimentally playing with forms of living and expressing life.
So when Hamid says that we're not working with the fundamental realization or the light or the luminosity, means we're not pointing to it. But at the moment, you can kind of feel a settledness in the space, a kind of quietness there along with the energy that's happening. So it's actually crucial that we have recognized some level of settledness in ourselves to really know divine eros, to really liberate the energy that arises out of that emptiness, out of the void, or out of the depth. That there, it's a dance between the two. But when we're talking about divine eros, we're talking about the aliveness, the energy part of realization. That's implicit even in the quietness. Even when you're quiet and completely in the depth of your being, there's shifts and change of conditions and states. But the expression of those shifting and changing in an explicit way is the energy and the dynamism of the universe. So when he says we're not working with the level of realization, it's always present with the energy. They're together.
I always wonder what people think when they're contemplating realization and awakening, enlightenment. What do they think will happen afterward? What will you do? How will you live? Many people think you'll just sort of live in bliss, blissed out, do nothing. I don't know, everybody has their ideas. Most people probably haven't thought about it yet. They're trying to get there. And we're saying we don't need to get there because some of it's already here. You know, we already can experience some of that. Some what the fully realized individual can experience can be experienced by many of us. Which is the dance of stillness. Dance of the abiding, the enjoyment of the fact that life is always changing circumstances. There are outer and inner changes all the time. It is part of life. And an important part of life, of course, as we said this morning, is relationship. How does this turn on quality manifest in the various relationships? So we want to focus some on that and work with it.
And the question of stillness and the energy is important here, because the stillness is actually our intimacy with ourselves. When we go in, when we are in being, there's a kind of stillness, a kind of depth, a kind of aloneness that's always there when we're recognizing what we are at the depth. And it's in realization, there's always aloneness. To know that aloneness and be able to be in that aloneness and with that intimacy with what we are when we're with another human being is the beginning of understanding the full potential of divine eros. You can experience divine eros before then, but it's the deeper we are within ourselves, the more we are in the condition of that recognition of the depth and the stillness of what we are, the more we have that intimacy, the more that intimacy can express itself in relationship with another without depending on them to be able to be there in any condition. In other words, we sometimes get into relationship so that we can be more of who we are. We believe that we need that as the support to be who we are instead of being what we are and then interacting from that depth of stillness and aloneness. So there needs to be a way that we understand and learn what it means to be alone in interaction with another person. Then we can feel that liberation. And alone doesn't mean there's somebody being alone. The aloneness in realization means, can mean, there is nobody there, which is a condition of aloneness, which is not having content there. No content feels through the gauzy history of the ego structure or the individual consciousness as aloneness, because there's always so much content that's keeping us company. So the relationship between that inner aloneness and intimacy and the intimacy with another is crucial, because that's where the connection really comes from.
And that is actually a big reason why human beings appreciate relationships, appreciate being together, appreciate relating to their friends, to their family, to their loved ones, because there is always a kind of intimacy, a kind of an enjoyment, a delight in the intimacy, the closeness, the nearness, make us feel as we are close to the other we love, we are close to ourselves at the same time. The two intimacies coincide, can coincide as one intimacy. And so human beings gravitate That is really the heart of the social instincts. The human being gravitate to be together. I mean, part of it is survival, wanting to cooperate and do things and fun and doing well. But being together is its own delight. And that happens in all relationships. It could be in families, you know, brothers, sisters, mother, father, and children, and
friendships.
Or it could be friends, colleagues, lovers, couples. Each one is different. And the way intimacy and the way the delight and the turned on quality of divine eros manifest is a little different and appropriate to the situation.
The turned on quality that comes is that dynamic, energetic, electric kind of feeling that enables the creative element to come into it, brings the creative element into the relationship. So when there's the receptivity, but there's also the activity that's embodied in each individual, that creates a kind of dynamic giving and taking that gets what we call, the technical term is looping. That's what we call it, because that was the experience of just this looping energetic field that became the totality of both and bigger than the sum of both. That energetically and like our very souls meld and become a unit that has this dynamic flowing creative force that opens up potential in both together, and that both together becomes a one dynamic field that is continually effulging and flowing and opening like a rose that opens and completes itself by opening. And opening, and the petals fall away, and it opens more. Petals fall away and disappear. And it continues to open, and it's creating itself while it's opening. It's not like there's something there, and oh, you see the potential. No, it's that each petal is being created and disappearing, and created and disappearing. And two people, I mean, a group of people, two people, doesn't matter, but we're going to talk about two people in relationship to one another, regardless of the particular characteristic of the relationship, creates a field in which the two are one. Where the one of our nature is expressing itself as two, but the intimacy is the linkage that brings about the one as two and the two as one. So there's a creative flow and a creative force of opening. And that can be participating in opening to deeper realization. In fact, some teachings, I understand, feel that you can't actually get to the final, whatever the final is. I've given up on final. The journey is so much fun. I don't know if I believe in final, but the secrets to the universe can only be unlocked through that dynamic kind of interpenetration, where two as one reveal different kinds of secrets.
Yeah, so you're probably referring to the Tantra that some tradition believe that...
Probably.
Yeah, some of the higher Tantras in both Hinduism and Buddhism believe there are two sure way for enlightenment, death yoga or sexual tantra. And this one or the other, and most people prefer the death yoga because it's easier.
But faced with a choice, take both.
But that brings me on to say something about that. The Divine Eros book and the topic that we're doing, it really takes some of the classical methods that I've known throughout history and recast them in a different contemporary way. For instance, one of the ways, classical ways, of taking the primal energy of the instincts and transforming it into transcendent energy. It is a Kundalini yoga. Kundalini yoga is taking the first energy in the first and second chakras, which is primal, you know, survival, sexual, and going through the various chakras until it gets to the heart and the mind and opens up the love and the clarity and the realization. Divine Eros is really about that fruition. But we're arriving at it not by doing the classical, you know, work with the Kundalini, whatever, but through an inquiry into our energy and our emotion and our relationship and our life situation of how to work with it to get to that essence, to that luminous essence that we call Divine Eros. And then we apply it. And by using another yoga, which is the sexual tantra, which usually has two, which is used to, again, use the same, the specifically sexual erotic energy to arrive at a condition of openness and realization. And in our work, what we've done, we've taken that principle of sexual tantra and turned it into a method that doesn't require sex. Right? Turned it into a method where any two people can practice it together. And we called it dialectic inquiry, where two people can interact, can talk and exchange energy appropriate to their relationship. And the energy can loop in itself, as Karen said, to create that kind of illumination, that kind where the relationship itself, the relational field, which is a field of energy, field of consciousness, if the two people are really open to each other, it's similar to kind of openness if you're really, really loving each other and vulnerable with each other. You're not just, let's have sex. It's more like there's tenderness and openness and sensitivity. If you, that openness, and since it can be between friends, can be between family members, because it's openness, intimacy, you know, receptivity, listening to the other, responding to the other. When there is that kind of energy between two people, and you interact and you speak, and each one brings in their truth. So you don't bring your bodies into each other. You bring your hearts and your mind, your consciousness, with each other and to penetrate. So you bring in your truth. You speak your truth. You express yourself. Well, I feel, you know, yesterday a little bit disappointed in you, and you know, we've been good friends, and the way you talk to me, the sort of left me sort of feeling disappointed. And your friend says, "Well, you know, I'm sorry about that. You know, what did I do?" But you see, the other person say, "Well, I didn't do anything." Say, "No, what did I do? Let me know." That's an openness, sensitivity. First person took in the plunge, right? Took in the initiative, brought in something, the other person responded, and there is an interaction that happens between the two people. When there is that openness, and there is a mutuality of interest in the openness, mutuality, interest in finding out what is the truth between us. So it is an application of what we kind of was talking about this morning, about what is a real relationship. Like each relationship has its truth at each moment. Just like at each moment you have your truth. What is really going on with you? The two together at each moment, whether they're very good friends, very good lovers, or they just met, there is something going on. There is a relationship. What is its truth? So if the two people are mutually interested to find out the truth of what is happening between the two of us. That way, you know yourself, you know the other, you know how the other knows you.
But there's also importance here about what we're calling openness, because we don't want to bypass the things that come up that feel uncomfortable or don't feel as open. It means being open to the closedness also. is saying, that really makes me want to go away. I feel like I just shut down, I'm really uncomfortable. That's also being open to what's there. But saying it in a way that's responsible, say it in a way that's owning your experience rather than, you just made me shut down. That's a very much pointing the fingers. The point here is to use all of our faculties and take responsibility for where we are. That had the effect of making me feel, you know, I just noticed that I'm feeling uncomfortable. I don't feel like I can be vulnerable right now, because it makes me, actually, I feel hurt that I did something that bothered you, but I feel like I want to justify it, and I want to, you know, so you get to have your experience, but just by saying that, by letting yourself take that whole shape, maybe all of a sudden you feel like you're a little kid with your mommy scolding you. So you can really feel that part and go, God, I feel like I shouldn't have done that. And then the other person can say, well, no, I'm not really laying that on you. I'm just saying I felt disappointed. I don't think it's your fault. Okay, well, that helps a little bit, but I'm feeling still uncomfortable. Okay. Just taking responsibility for where you are is part of it. The other is to just to be able to find a way to say what's true for you, but also not just because we want to get the information out. It's really coming from a real place in you. Meaning we really need to sense, where am I? Do I feel present when I'm talking about this? Do I not feel present? Do I feel empty? Do I feel, you know, what is actually my sensate experience? Not just going up into my mind and trying to determine where I am, but actually we need to feel our body. We need to feel what are the emotions that are getting stimulated. Or there might be something else that's coming into the field. There might be a sense of presence that's beyond the two of you that you can actually feel, that's palpable. In fact, when we're in this kind of communication and we're actually feeling ourselves deeply, that's when we start to feel that which is beyond our emotions, our bodies, and our own minds. Because this energy and this stillness is not something that happens inside in terms of here. That might be where it starts, but when you're with somebody, there's a whole field that has a quality to it. So it's important to attend to that also. Have your sensitive tentacles out to what's happening in the atmosphere, not just in your body, in your body language, in your heart, your belly, the things going around in your mind, your associations, but what is the actual quality of the communication like?
Yeah. So if you be really listening, taking in Karen, you'll be feeling alive. You'll be feeling turned on. You'll be feeling excited. You'll be feeling interested. That means you're letting yourself be influenced. You see, relationship has a lot to do with mutual influence. People are afraid of being influenced, while relationship is all about influence, about being influencing the other and allowing ourselves to be influenced by them, meaning impacting the other and allowing ourselves being impacted. And through this mutual impact, it's just like in the Kundalini yoga, you're touched by the Kundalini, it opens you up. You're touched by the Kundalini of the other, which activates your Kundalini. And as your Kundalini is activated, which is your aliveness, your feelings, your energy, if the other is sensitive listening to you, they feel that and activate their Kundalini is even further. So Kundalini is your energy, your Shakti, your prana.
We never talk about Kundalini. Isn't that funny?
Yes.
I mean, I think Kundalini really is the specific way that it travels up the spine and you get the whole cobra thing, I believe. But the Shakti is the energy that can open through that channel and infuse the entire relationship. For us, the Eros has Shakti with it, but it also has the love, the fullness. The erotic nature of it is that energy mixed with the fullness of who we are as an individual consciousness that's in contact with another. That individual consciousness is in touch at every point of its fullness. Yeah. In touch, alive, and that's the erotic, sensual feeling. And that's not just the body is feeling sensual. No, there's this fullness that's expansive beyond the body and has a fullness that's a there-ness, that's a palpable feeling. It's not just, oh, my body feels really full and I feel really... No, that fullness, what is it? It is your consciousness. Alive, thriving, pulsing, rippling, electric.
Yeah. And the divine eros quality of character of it is that it is a living curiosity.
And magnetic.
A magnetic pull to the truth, to the other, to intimacy with the other, but more through the intimacy with the truth of what is happening. See, the truth of what is happening, which is exactly what sexual tantra does, but done here through just an interaction between two people of any level, any kind of interaction. You can be speaking with each other, you see.
Actually, we're looping, if you hadn't noticed. Yeah.
But an important part of it is being open to the other and being open to be impacted by them and to be attuned that what we do, what we say, does impact the other. And we are attuned to the impact, not in the sense we're doing it to control them, but we're sensitive to how it impacts them. So how we say it, it's optimizing to the situation, the opening up instead of closing down situation.
And the opening up is an opening that you don't know where it will go. It's not to get enlightened. It's not to get to a certain state. It's actually to find out what can happen here? What is happening here? What is it that's going to happen? We don't know. So to suspend the notions of getting somewhere and seeing what is actually here right now. Mm-hmm. Want to try it?
Yeah. So you do it with ourselves, and we do it in dialectic inquiry and dyads with two people together and exploring the feel, the relationship that's happening in the moment, in the here and now. Because as you explore it, just as you explore yourself, things open up and change and develop. You discover things that are difficult or easy or wonderful. Here it could expand. It could move to include the whole universe, or it could take you to a wormhole, to another universe, or it could take you to a wormhole inside a little nut inside your heart. See, you don't know what will happen. So, and that's what I'm saying. We don't know what's going to happen.
But there might be a whole universe
inside
that little knot.
But that's part of divine eros. It loves to find out the mystery. See? So let's try it.
So we're going to do an exercise that is done in dyads. So you want to find a partner. You do not need to know this person. If you do know this person, it would be useful to include the fact that you don't know this person totally. What you think you know, I'd like you to suspend. Find out what else might be there. In fact, it's sometimes easier to do this exercise with somebody you don't know because you don't know, and you're admitting you don't know. With somebody you've been married to for 25 years, oh, I already know them already, you might find something new. You want to sit facing one another. You want to be in an alert position, so if you're on the ground, make sure that you're able to be sitting straight. Let me give the instructions first, and then you can start moving around. Then what you want to do is just begin to describe or discuss what's going on either between you, whatever your first responses might be, and see what happens as you interact in the inquiry. And you want to be approaching the experience with curiosity. suspending your ideas about what's supposed to happen, suspending your ideas about what the person is or isn't. But you want to acknowledge all those things at the same time. And let the conversation have all of the elements in it that we described earlier. Historical associations, feelings, thoughts, and ideas, but also attending to the presence or the atmosphere that's there as well. Okay?
There are also counterindications in this practice, which is another way of saying heartful intelligence navigation together, which is we're not analyzing the other person. We're not...
No psychic reading.
No psychic reading. You're not therapizing. You're not giving advice. You're not criticizing or admonishing. You see, you're really just finding out the truth of the moment between the two of you, which can't have history, which is okay to bring in the history and work it out and discuss it. But also, and depending on who you are with, there are boundaries, you know, we need to respect. You don't talk to your daughter to the way you talk to your wife. It's different, you see. And what happened between you is different. So you need to respect the kind of relationship. So that's part of the intelligent navigation. Otherwise, thing will close down. We'll have two, what's lubing become a negative thing instead of an opening thing.
It also isn't an invitation to try to get a dinner date. You can do that later, but this is really about finding out what the potential is between two people and how to open up the shared field. No matter how well you know the person, that has a potential of opening up or of closing down. And in most relationships and in most kinds of contact, there's going to be a bit of a rhythm of both, and that's fine. You just watch that and see what's happening, what's closing it down. Go into it and let that flower. So yes. You're not trying to get it to open. You want to just be real, be truthful, pay attention, and
so
see what happens.
It's a practice, you see, we have been working with, and we find it very useful, so having a chance for us to practice it here. So for 20 minutes, we call dialectic inquiry between two people for 20 minutes. And after the 20 minutes of interaction, so the dialectic inquiry is not telling your story. You're actually interacting. You're expressing yourself. You're saying what your feelings are about yourself or about the situation, about the other, and back and forth, responsiveness, true interaction. And after the 20 minutes of dialectic inquiry, then you have 10 minutes of looking back at it and trying to understand what happened. What got illuminated? What happened? What got illuminated? That's the 10 minutes reflection on it. So we'll have 30 minutes.
Then we'll come back and have questions and comments, so, and we'll talk further about it and go into a different kind of exercise that...
So you choose a partner, take your time, choose a partner, find a place. You can do here, you can be outside. See.
And we'll be back in a half an hour and try to keep pretty close to that time frame.